welcome to another episode of the Saxo Market Call podcast. As always, I am your host and my name is Søren Otto. And since it is Tuesday, we're going to talk equities, and that also means that I am joined by you, Peter Garnery, and for once in the studio. Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Hi, Søren. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good, thanks. The weather is great, and yeah, it's always cozy to have you here. So looking forward to a good talk. Obviously, earnings is going to take the bulk of what we're going to talk about because it is one of the big earnings weeks. So I think we should just jump into it. But just to start where we always start these episodes, let's have a look at the regional performance this month. How has how's the different sector or regions around the world performed in equities these days, Peter?
Yeah, we can talk about sectors as well. But it's the past week, if we take the last business closing day, so that, you know, we are recording here on a Tuesday. So if we take as Monday's closing prices and then go 1 week back, we can say that it was the comeback week. The decline in the equity market was halted, and it was in particularly the emerging markets countries that really did well. Emerging markets, I think, was up 4.5%, and Chinese equities up 6.5%. So I think the Chinese story is the big one from last week, and then the US was a little bit ahead of the European market. And if we look at the sector breakdown, it was really a comeback to consumer discretionaries and technology. And just so everyone is aware of what is technology, well, it's technology is it's software, it's hardware, and it's semiconductors basically. And then if you look at the consumer discretionaries, what is that? It's typically a lot about fashion and textile industry. It's a lot about the car makers. So that's the landscape.
All right, good stuff. And just to kind of follow that thread, if we look at earnings have been going on for a few weeks now, or the earnings season, I should say. What's the status overall? Has it performed along the lines that we expected, or has it outperformed, or are we disappointed as we stand here today?
No, I mean the surprise ratio has been pretty nice. So 80% of all the little bit more than 200 companies in the S&P 500 has surprised on earnings, and the surprise in percentage on the aggregate, so how much total net income did the companies generate relative to what they was expected, that was a 9%. Surprise. So that's pretty okay. Revenue has, and that's even more important because revenue is the best predictor of is a better predictor of the future, and those figures have stacked up pretty well in the US as well, both on the growth level but also against expectations. Europe is the only place where there has been a little bit of a disappointment so far. We are getting more European earnings, so we could come back in a week's time from now and have a very different conclusion. But so Europe has disappointed a little bit on revenue. So I would say pretty okay. And this earnings season is definitely not something that is going to derail the rally that we have seen in equities.
No, I was just about to say, it seems like we're far away from the recession discussions we had in January and really looking into this year.
Yeah. Did we have a discussion about recessions?
I think so. Okay. Maybe not.
Well, I'm not so sure we talked about it. I'm not so sure we talked about a recession, but it's maybe you're right. Yeah, we were talking about that. You know, that the central banks were warming up to a lot of interest rate cuts, and you're right. I mean, the economy was it going to slow down or not? And yeah, I think the companies here are just basically showing that things are pretty well. I think the outlook as well from a lot of these companies that have reported already seems pretty solid.
Mm. Interesting. One of the companies that we should start touching on, we're mainly going to look ahead to a busy week, but yesterday we had Philips coming out with a settlement in the US, and it just had a remarkable stock price movement. Could you just lay out the land, what happened there?
Yeah, so Philips is this, they call themselves a health technology company, very much, they both have an enterprise, but also a consumer business, and they have had been going through a lot of litigation risk and cost related to a sleep apnea machine therapy, or therapy machine, I should say. And there has been a lot of uncertainty around that over the years, and the stock price have done really bad, right? And when they came out with their results yesterday, the stock price was up 43%. They came out with the announcement that they had settled with the U.S. authorities, so for $1.1 billion, and that just created a lot of clarity going forward on what could be, you know, the profitability. I mean, markets really like clarity. So that was a very positive thing. And then, so immediately with that 43% jump, Philips was back into a valuation range that was in par with the overall European market. Historically, Philips have been trading at a premium to the European market. So the question now is, will this momentum continue, and will Philips now get back in the game with, you know, being a company with solid operating margins and a good return on capital? That's sort of the outstanding question from here.
And that will definitely be interesting to follow. I mean, that price jump yesterday was remarkable. It's I don't think I've ever seen something like that, at least not for such a big stock in the few years I've been dealing with the financial industry. But if we go ahead and look towards what's going to happen very, very soon from now, and maybe you won't have listened to this podcast before, Eli Lilly is going to report.
They have already reported.
Then that is not going to be possible to listen to this beforehand. What was the outcome of that report then?
Yeah. Well, right now, just before we went into the studio, the share price was up around 10% in pre-market. So they basically coming out with blockbuster numbers. It's really going well for them. The Zepbound and Mounjaro drugs are doing well. Zepbound is the obesity drug, beating expectations by a wide margin, and they basically hiking the outlook. So that's pretty good. And what you can see here in Europe, and we're going to talk about that in a few minutes, Novo Nordisk, which is their European competitor, is also trading up 3-4% last time I checked. So there's a lot of positive vibe and momentum around these obesity drugs. And Eli Lilly has long been sort of the market's favorite, although they are playing catch up with Novo. They do seem to, at least it looks like in the trials, that they have a slightly better compound where the receptor is a little bit more efficient. I think this market is big enough for both of these companies. So this is great news for the US pre-market trading here.
Definitely. And let's just stay with Novo Nordisk then, because they are reporting before market opens on Thursday, and that, as you say, is a European competitor to Eli Lilly. Are we expecting somewhat the same response from Novo, that they're once again going to beat expectations and have a good performance?
Well, now that you already have had the Eli Lilly numbers, it obviously takes a little bit of the surprise factor out of the Novo Nordisk results. I mean, then it really becomes about whether they how bold they are on their outlook. Mm-hmm. So time will tell. But we can say from the Eli Lilly numbers, of course, that the Novo Nordisk numbers are going to be great. There's one company that we haven't talked about or have not put in the script, and we've talked a lot about defense stocks, and this morning the Norwegian defense company Kongsberg Gruppen reported earnings, and despite a phenomenal rally in the stock price and rising expectation, they even exceeded the analyst expectations and put out an outlook that got the share price going up by another 3-4%. And I think the reason why I want to highlight that is that got a lot of clients recently that are talking about, is it too late to jump on the defense basket? And I think when you have a big theme, it takes quite some time often before these estimates are fully being priced or reflected in market. It can take time. I mean, this rally in defense stocks could continue for quite some time. And I think what part of the inertia that has been in that market is because of the shun that the whole ESG part of the institutional setup has sort of been shying away from defense companies. So that, I think, makes the price mechanism move a bit more slow on these companies.
And I guess sort of the connection to Eli Lilly and Novo here might be that sort of the obesity drug industry and European defense, alongside probably AI on a long-term basis, is some of the sectors that we generally believe, or you generally believe, is some of the most intriguing right now.
That is most certainly the sectors where there are a lot of growth right now.
All right, let's move on till after the US market close today. We're going to see Amazon, kind of a big deal.
Yeah, probably.
Reporting. What's the expectations there?
Well, pretty solid expectation. it's a business where we already know from Microsoft and Alphabet that the cloud business is doing well, right? So a lot of the operating income from Amazon is not coming from what they're most famous for, basically the Amazon website and the e-commerce business. The majority of the profits are coming from their cloud business, the AWS. And based on what we have seen so far, the expectations also with the generative AI, all these AI workloads that a lot of companies are experimenting with, should prove to show pretty healthy demand there. And then Amazon is also increasingly rolling out, becoming a bigger and bigger force in the US advertising market. So, they have opened up that you can advertise on their e-commerce platform. It's becoming a bigger and bigger part of their business. And I think a nice icing on the cake there. So, I expect a pretty solid result from Amazon. And they really have scars from the pandemic where they overinvested. So they right now is in the opposite mood. They're really holding back on CapEx and operating expenses, and I think that will show that the profits are growing pretty nicely this quarter, we should say the previous quarter, because it is Q1 and we are already in Q2.
Yeah, fair enough. AMD is reporting more or less at the same time. What's your take on that company?
Well, AMD is the little brother to NVIDIA, right? Mm. So for all those that are listening in, there are gamers out there. They know AMD. It's the graphics processing unit card you would go with as your second choice if you don't have enough money to buy the Ferrari, which has often been the NVIDIA. AMD is a little bit of a curious case because they haven't really captured the tailwind of the generative AI yet. But they right now, they're suffering from a weak demand on the consumer electronics side of things, on the gaming segment, but they're also on the client service part of the business. They're struggling a little bit, but the market is sort of seeing through this, and it's because of they recently put out an outlook where their new generative AI GPUs that are coming to the market, they have pretty high expectations. They actually recently raised the revenue expectations to $3.5 billion for this new product class from previously $2 billion. This is an interesting, and I think the whole market will look through what potentially is going to be a weak quarter. It's all about the outlook. Okay. Will they? Because now it's the catch up play that they're going to play now against NVIDIA, and I think the world craves competition because NVIDIA is so dominant in the GPUs for generative AI workloads.
Are there any like takes on why AMD hasn't caught on to NVIDIA? Like, what are there any?
They were just not. I mean. NVIDIA basically created the entire ecosystem around machine learning and with GPUs and all these this deep neural network and the CUDA software platform, and they were integrating with a lot of these open source platforms or libraries for creating machine learning applications, et cetera. So they just cultivated that ecosystem. It was used by the machine learning AI community way back, and then to a degree that AMD did not. I think they were more obsessed about just the more classic gaming market. And we had a conversation. We had some guys coming over from NVIDIA the other day. I think it was last week. It was an interesting conversation. And the telltale from NVIDIA's own people is that they say, as I'm quoting them, they say people look at us as a GPU company. So we generate or we produce hardware, and that's what we sell. But effectively, if you look at what people are doing at NVIDIA, 80% of the people are working with software. Hmm. That's what they're doing.
Interesting.
So that's it was a very different, interesting take on that. And I actually came out of that meeting with a little bit of an understanding why Dell, which is one of the old dinosaurs in the technology sector, if it can be so rude to say that, I had not grasped why that company would grow as it is right now. But the NVIDIA guys were talking a lot about that. Companies that have use cases already in the US where a lot of companies are saving a lot of money on their cloud cost with Azure from Microsoft or AWS from Amazon, where they could basically spin up and create the same type of AI models. They could use what the open libraries from NVIDIA, and then you could get Dell in as a partner, and they would build an on-premise AI cluster of high performance computers and with these AI chips, and then you could actually save some money. So I thought that okay, that's a pretty interesting value proposition and maybe a lurking risk factor for some of these cloud providers.
Definitely. That sounds maybe like something we should dig into in a bit more detail at some point. But before we go, Peter, Thursday, we also have another relatively large company, Apple, reporting. I mean, they faced some headwinds lately, but is obviously a very popular company and is one of the, I guess, one of the what do you call the six pack now, not the Magnificent Seven.
With Tesla's incredible surge yesterday, because Elon Musk created a self-driving self-driving technology deal with China. Then maybe it is the Magnificent Seven. Who knows? But yeah, I called it six pack, and Apple is not expected to generate a very good result. I mean, they are under pressure on the hardware side. The Chinese market is weak. If there is any sprinkle around the earnings result, it will be from the services segment, which is also the future. That's where they're going to make the most money. They have built a digital highway. And whatever we consume on that highway, being in that parlance, going to the restaurants that are near the highway, which is their, Apple movies and the music streaming, etc. That's where they're going to make the money in the future. And I think there's a temporary setback for Apple here, but I'm not super nervous. And there was a lot of chatter the other day about that now the iPad is in focus on anti-competition review from the EU, etc. And I think if you're a shareholder in a lot of these large US technology companies, I think we're getting pretty used to thinking bad thoughts about regulation. And at the end of the day, we've talked about it now for 6 or 7 years, and it's not holding them back in terms of generating profits.
We'll have to see what happens on Thursday. That is after the market close in the US.
And we should say it sounds like there's not a lot of earnings. There is a lot of earnings. Yes. I mean, there's more than 300 earnings, and there's a ton coming out in the Europe this week. We just can't talk about them all, but we'll probably, if there's some major movers, we'll definitely catch that maybe next week.
Definitely. And I wanted to ask you, Peter, before we go, if obviously you have a lot on your plate in these earnings season, but what are you most looking forward to? Is that one of these earnings, or is there some hidden gem that you're excited to see how it's going with?
No, these are the big ones from the market perspective, but we had talked about internally about Adidas as well, and they reported today, and they confirmed that there is Samba going on in the world, because the new CEO that came from Puma, probably the project had been going on for some while, but he has turbocharged this huge bet on bringing back the Samba model, and it's becoming a huge deal. It's such a strong momentum that I don't even think Sunak, Prime Minister in the UK, with his little hiccup with the Samba, can derail what is happening. And it's very exciting, because it's one of those things where, you know, everyone have been betting hard on Nike, and Nike has been doing so much better than Adidas for the past 5-6 years, and now suddenly it seems like the tide has turned.
All right, exciting stuff. But as you say, Peter, we're going to revisit this if any of the other companies obviously do something extraordinary. And you and I will be back Tuesday, and I will be back Thursday, most likely with Althea. But thank you so much, Peter, for coming and making us all a little bit smarter.
It's a pleasure.
And to all of you out there, on behalf of Peter Garnery, the Saxo Market Call podcast, everybody here at Saxo, my name is Søren Otto. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back anytime soon, but until then, happy trading.